Okay, hello, welcome. It's really a pleasure for me to introduce the presentation of Hugues Ferrebeuf. Sorry, maybe for the bad French pronunciation, but he will present why we need to redesign internet to fight climate change. I'm very happy to introduce this presentation, as Hugues Ferrebeuf is not only one of the experts of the D4S, the Digitalization for Sustainability, but he is also one of the leading people in the French think tank, the SHIFT project. And you published, I think it's 4 years ago or something like this, a very well appreciated report, which was also going to a lot of media and press, and it was bringing a lot of attention to, in particular, to the video, online video topic, and was bringing the discussion also to Netflix use and this kind of stuff. So this was coming from this SHIFT project, and he was the person behind. So I was well aware of your name since quite a long time, but I had never the chance to meet you. So now I hand over to you, and at the end you plan some time for questions at the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Good afternoon. Can you hear me all right? Yes, perfect. It will make things easier. Why we need to redesign internet to fight climate change? I already used this title in some other presentations, in some other contexts, and generally people are puzzled. Why are you asking this question? Why should you ask it in this way? I think after 3 days of Bits and Boehm conference, it doesn't sound so peculiar. And we'll see, especially, why we have at the moment actually some systemic causes behind the fact that the digital environment footprint is not going in the right direction. And one of these systemic causes is not only the big tech, but the big tech business models. And so that's the purpose of this presentation, is to explain why it is the case. I'd like to say that part of these results, you will be able to find them also in the D4S report that we presented on Friday and Saturday. And because there is a chapter on the business models. And also, there should be a specific paper published on that in a few weeks with all the details behind. as it was said, what I'm going to do is to make a presentation that should last for about 35-40 minutes, and then we have some time for questions and answers. However, please, in the course of the presentation, do not hesitate to ask questions for clarification, not for discussion, but if I've said something which is not clear, please say it. That will be more efficient. So, let's start. as it was said, the SHIFT project and actually myself, we did work on a number of reports. Not going to comment them all, and the first one is on the left, and that's the one that raised some attention from the media. I must say also that probably one of the reasons why it raised some attention from the media is because it was published just 1 week after the IPCC 1.5 degrees report. So we were leveraging actually an existing context that was quite favorable. the last report we published in the SHIFT project was last year, and that was both an update of prospective trajectories we built out in 2018, and also some thinking about 5G governance, or more generally about new infrastructure governance. I'd like to mention that I would say one of the things we are quite proud of in the SHIFT project is that probably we contributed to the fact that digital sustainability has become a topic not only for environmentalists in France, but it has become a law, since there's been a law passed in 2021 called the Law for the Reduction of the Digital Environmental Footprint. And we didn't write the law, of course, no? So it was a long process. But part of these reports were contributors. And also two other reports that actually I did myself, one for the French Senate and one for the High Council for the Climate. So, and maybe even more importantly, digital sustainability has now become a regular topic within the association of the top French companies' IT managers. That's the one in the digital sobriety. And that has triggered the fact that now a number of companies are trying to understand how to still manage the digital transformation, but while trying to limit the environmental impacts of this transformation, and also trying to make sure that this digital transformation is going to serve their energy or environmental transformation. Okay, so that's the good thing. However, I would say it's not because we publish reports that the world is changing. When we updated the figures in 2021, we had to just to confirm that what we said in 2018 was still quite valid, actually. and the reasons behind is that there are some systemic causes behind this trend. And to be complete, you have noticed that the title of the D4S report we published is Digital Reset. That means that after 2 years of dialogue, we also, and I would like to mention that I have a D4S colleague, two D4S colleagues actually, Joanna, please, and Matthias. Thank you. We came up collectively to the conclusion that trying to make progress through marginal changes will not be enough, and that we need a fundamental reconfiguration of how digital systems are working at the moment. And that's why we call that digital reset. So, what I'm going to say, just two slides on climate change mitigation, and not want to make a speech about climate change mitigation, just to remember a few figures because I will use them later on in the presentation. Explain rapidly, because it was, I think, largely covered in these BNB sessions, why digital is part of the problem, and I will try to spend more time on why the big tech business models is the root cause of unsustainability. So that means there are two things behind. root cause is not only the big tech, but also their business models. That means if these were not the big techs, but other companies with the same business models, we would have the same consequences. And eventually, what is the way forward? How can we make sure we get out of this situation? And what we should do? So, and because I want to present these slides, because anything I'm going to say later on, I'm not going to say it in absolute terms, I'm going to say it in view of the constraints we are going to face in the next 10 to 15 years. Okay. Because if we do not manage properly the 10-year period which is in front of us, well, the rest will become another story, and carbon neutrality in 2050 is nice, but the real objective for me is being able to halve the emissions by 2030. Okay, and that's the consensus today, given. The fact that decarbonation techniques or carbon capture techniques are far from being industrialized, we have to rely mainly on the reduction of gross emissions. And the benchmark for that is we want to not to go too much above 1.5 degrees, we should cut by half the emissions by 2030. So, and that should be valid for any industry sector, including digital. Second thing, which is very important, and to my surprise, is which is generally much less discussed, is the fact that in order to be able to achieve this midterm target, halving the CO2 emissions by 2030. Of course, we'll have to substitute electricity generated through via fossil energy with electricity generated via renewable energy. Good. Problem is, and we see that very much at the moment, is that the volume of electricity that we are going to be able to generate from renewable energy until 2030 is limited. It's limited because of our industrial capacity, it's limited because of the length, time it takes to install electricity plants out of renewable energy. For instance, I don't know in Germany, but in France, installing installing anything which is going to let's say to take things out of people and could be a nice view or something like that. You need 10 years actually to go through the process. Okay. So my point, and it's not me who's saying that, the International Energy Agency has been saying it for 3 years. If we want to be able to halve CO2 emissions by 2030, we have to reduce globally the energy consumption by 2030. Okay. And on average, we need to reduce it by 7% between 2020 and 2030. And the effort needs to be higher in developed countries. For instance, in Europe, it is 15%. Okay. So why am I stressing on this point? Because any carbon neutral strategy that does not also include a strategy on how to reduce the energy consumption is not going to work. Okay? It might work maybe on a local basis, But if it works, it would make things more difficult on a global basis. Okay. So that means that also on the digital side, the digital energy consumption at least should not be increasing. Okay. So, yeah. On the last slide? Okay.
So the energy needs to reduce, but this implies.
Sorry, this is showing an increase in electricity generation, but the total energy supply, like heating and stuff like that,
yeah.
that reduces, but the electricity use would be going higher, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, electricity is going to increase, but the total energy supply must decrease. And that generally is the missing part of the speech. Okay, so rough figures, digital footprint today between 3 and 4%. Okay, so higher than airline industry. But maybe more importantly, GHG emissions are growing at a rate of about 6% a year. Okay, and so 6% a year is about exactly the contrary of what we should be targeting. We should be targeting for minus 6% a year if we want to divide emissions by two, and it's increasing by 6%. Okay, so that's why I said at the beginning the trajectory is not on the right path. if we look at the footprint, clearly the footprint due to end-user devices is the largest part, about 75%. It depends on the countries, actually, but on a worldwide basis. And within this part, the production part is very important. The carbon which is embodied in the equipment during the production phase is generally higher than what is going to be generated during the use phase for an end user device. Okay. For a smartphone, it's about 85%. 85% of the carbon footprint of this smartphone, if I keep it for 3 years, is the emissions which were generated when it was manufactured. Okay, and that's again a worldwide average, because when you manage to reduce the carbon intensity of the electricity, the carbon emissions of the use phase are going to decrease. You keep the same energy. And so therefore, the proportion of the production phase is going to increase even more. Okay. and I didn't show it there, but if you looked at any of these components, you would say that all of them, actually, their contribution to GHG emissions or to energy consumption is increasing. There is no one component which is especially responsible, I would say, for the growth of the digital footprint. So that's one thing. Second thing is, of course, when you produce more and if you have not in place a circular economy, well, you get more materials at the end of life. So in 2019, there were about 55 million tons of electronic devices that were, let's say, going somewhere. And I'm saying that like that because we actually know where this somewhere is only for 15% of these 55 million. The rest of them is a gray area. But a good part of this gray area is something like that, which is in Ghana, and where ultimately these electronic devices end up, and where people will try to get out of them what they can. And of course, with a lot of prejudice, both to the health of the local populations and everything. So, not a very nice picture. And so, I don't know if you attended the DFRS report presentation, but Lawrence Hilty, who is one of our colleagues, explained that if we are in this situation, it's not at all because there is not enough progress in terms of energy efficiency. No, probably the digital sector is the one which has been making the most progress in terms of energy efficiency in the past 15 years. And you can see that, for instance, when you see actually how many computations you can do per kilowatt hour for the different generations of processors. You can see that each generation is almost bringing a progress of one order of magnitude compared to the former one. So, if we have this growth of environmental footprint, not because of energy efficiency, it's just because we have too many digital volumes. And you can see that on this graph. Actually, the CO2 footprint is going to result from the product of the energy consumption coming from digital and the carbon intensity of this energy. Okay. Then the energy consumption is going to result from how many people are using digital, and this is increasing but slowly now in the past few years. But more importantly, it's going to result from what is called here energy intensity of technology, which means in practical terms, how many end-user devices you own per person, how much data traffic you are generating, how long you are keeping your existing devices, and so on and so on. So, sorry, this, what I said is relates to technology influence. and this is actually the factor which has been increasing the most. And I must say, don't have time for that, but I can answer the question in the end. I must say where it has increased the most is also where it is already the largest. In other terms, in in the US a few years ago, there were about 8 digital devices per inhabitant. At the moment, there are about 13. Okay, so 55% increase. On a worldwide basis, probably there has been an increase, but only of 15 or 20%. So, where there is already a very high usage of digital is also the places where the digital technology influence is increasing the fastest. And that's some examples. So here on the left, you have what is called here the stock or the installed base of digital devices. So we have about, at the moment, about 20 billion digital devices installed in use in the world. And if we believe the analysts, the sector analysts, we should have close to 50 billion, 50, 50 billion devices in 2030. So more than doubling in 10 years. Another example is the growth rate of the traffic in the mobile networks, which is on a worldwide basis on the past 3 years in the range of 45%. 45% a year. Okay. That's just huge. And as you can see, again, according to the analyst, there is no thing which says that this trend should stop in the near term. And of course, what is true for the installed base is true also for the sales of new equipment. And at the moment, we are selling about 4 billion digital devices a year, and probably be selling twice as many in 10 years, which means that between now and 2030, we will sell about 70 billion digital devices. Okay. And if we have 7 billion people on the planet, that means 10 per person. Okay. And what's going to happen? What is happening in the digital world is that at a given time you have a number of different equipments that are in use. And then some of these equipments become less popular, but actually before they become less popular, you have new types of equipment which arrive and which are actually a new growth driver for the vendors of digital devices. And that's what is happening at the moment with the Internet of Things, where we are going to equip virtually any non-digital thing with a digital module to make sure that it can be connected to the internet. So there's been a lot of discussion about why do we have that? It's because people want new services. It's because the vendors, they are still in the linear economy, and so they need each year to sell more devices than before, and so on and so on. Actually, it's a bit more complex than that. There is a lot of interactions now, and digital is already so much present in our daily lives that actually, the dynamics behind this trend that I've described are very complicated. So it has really become what can be called a systemic issue. And some characteristics of this systemic issue. The first one is very important, that probably even you, maybe probably a few things that I said, you didn't know them. For instance, who knew that a smartphone like this, its carbon footprint is about 80 kilos? Who knew that? Okay, two people out of 30. And I think you are probably more informed than the average citizen on these type of things. Yeah. So there is a complete unawareness of the sustainability aspects of our digital things and usages at the moment. Okay. So there is nothing, maybe it's a bit trivial example, but when you have a car, okay, and you decide to go, in Germany you can do more, but you decide to do 130 on the autobahn rather than 110, then when you have to go to the gas station, you will see that you need to put 15% more gas into your tank, so it's 15% more expensive. So after a while, maybe you decide, okay, maybe I will not go down to 110, but I will go down to 120. Okay. So there is what I mean is there is a feedback loop that helps you to regulate your car usage. At the moment, there is no feedback loop at all in digital, especially with the fact that a lot of services now are either offered for free or seem to be offered for free, or they are offered for a fixed sum, and then you can consume as much as you want. So there is no mechanism in place that is there to facilitate this self-regulation. Okay. on the enterprise side, and I feel a bit guilty about that because I was one of them not so long ago. The companies have been briefed by digital vendors on the fact that, well, to achieve future growth, they need to transform digitally, and they need to do it faster than the competitor, because if they are late, they will lose market share. Yeah? And we've been quite effective, actually. Because now every company almost is working on its digital transformation, and they have associated so much this digital transformation effort with, let's say, future profits or even the future of the company. If we don't do it, we are going to lag behind and maybe we won't exist in 5 years' time. That it's not natural at all for them to think or to admit that this digital transformation could be detrimental on the environmental side. Okay. and then third thing, a bit the same phenomenon. Policymakers are very worried about anything that would prevent digital to grow, because they think that it could affect negatively the GDP of the country and the growth of the GDP. Okay, but there is one other root cause which I'd like to comment in more details today, which is the fact that the big tech models that rely on audience maximization is actually intrinsically incompatible with sustainability. Okay. So, what makes things worse is that these big tech are completely dominant. And that's 2020 figures. 2021 figures would be even more threatening. But the total market capitalization was in the range of $10,000 billion. And as you can see, these big tech are virtually the top 10 companies in the world. Okay, by market capitalization. So anything they do is going to have a major impact, and anything they want is also going to have a major impact, because they have a lot of power to achieve it. And this dominance, actually, we can find it also on the physical side of things. In 2021, six companies have generated 57% of the total internet traffic in the world. Okay, 57%. Six companies. And in some countries, it's even worse. I don't know in Germany, but in France, it's probably around 70%. Okay. So, and that's the market share, okay? But if you look at what has been going on in the past 3-4 years, you will see that actually these six companies are responsible this time for 75% of the growth. So virtually, not only they drive the market, but they create the market. And you can see the same thing on the smart speaker market, where they have actually 70-80% of market share. And the problem, their dominance has a lot, creates a lot of problems and competition, privacy, societal consequences, and so on, and so on. It's not my point today, but it creates also a lot of problems on the environmental side, and why? Because actually, they are probably one of the few companies in the world whose revenue energy intensity is growing. So what is the revenue energy intensity? It is actually the energy a company needs to generate 1 euro of revenue, okay? And what is happening is that each year, for instance, Google is going to use 4% more energy to generate this euro of revenue, okay? And why am I saying that they're probably one of the very rare companies that are in this situation? Because in the past 10, 15 years, the revenue energy intensity at world level, which means the energy intensity of the worldwide GDP, has been decreasing at about 1.5% a year. Okay? And it's actually something which is necessary if we want to be able to reconcile as much as possible economic growth and reduction on environmental footprint. It's called decoupling, okay? So here, it's not at all decoupling. It's decoupling in the other way. Each year, it's getting worse, actually. And why is that? How, for instance, does Google make most part of its revenue? Well, what they do is they have a lot of users which go on that platform, Google, YouTube, and so on. And when you go there, well, maybe you can provide some personal data, but you also provide, without knowing it, a lot of behavioral data. Okay? And these data, Google are going to use them in order to build some information that then they will be able to sell to third parties that will use this information to try to sell services and products to you. That's their business model. and so, what is the what's going to make them successful? What is going to make Google successful? It's its ability to attract as many users as possible on its platform, and to make these users stay as long as possible on its platform. And how can Google achieve that? Well, it can achieve that by making its platform always sexier, always more attractive than other platforms. And for that, what are they going to use? They are going to use data. They are going to use videos, especially at the moment. probably virtual reality in a few years. Okay, so they are going to use actually some data as materials to build an environment that is going to make you stay as long as possible and to come back as often as possible. And and each year they need to enhance this environment to make sure that it still remains attractive and more attractive than alternatives. Okay? And they do that, when they do that, they're actually responsible for a huge augmentation of traffic. You see, 42% a year for Google, 60% a year for Meta, Facebook. It's gigantic growth rates. So the consequence of these business models is that not only is going to increase their own direct energy consumption. Okay, the direct energy consumption, what it is their data centers' energy consumption. Google's energy consumption is increasing by 25% a year. 25% a year. Okay. So it's increasing a bit more rapidly than its revenue. Okay. And they have that, even though their data centers are probably the most efficient in the world. Okay. So again, it's not a problem of energy efficiency, it's a problem of affluence. Now, since especially 2 years, a lot of these big tech have announced to the market, no problem, we have plans to become carbon neutral in 2030, but don't worry, we are going to cut our emissions. And actually, when they do that, they are only speaking about what is called scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. I don't know, are you familiar with this? Who is not familiar? Okay, so when you try to establish the carbon footprint, for instance, of a company, you have several, let's say, scopes that you need to investigate. The first one is how much fossil energy are you consuming directly? Means with your cars, with your trucks, with your central heating, if you use gas or petrol, and so on. Okay. Scope 2 is basically how much electricity do you use? Because we know that electricity is still 60% of electricity in the world is still produced out of fossil energy. So consuming electricity at the moment creates emissions. So that's scope 2. And in many countries, companies are obliged to measure and to report only scope 1 and scope 2. Okay. Well, so what is scope 3? Scope 3 is actually, in the digital world, especially two important things. It is the carbon footprint of the equipment you are buying, because you have not produced them yourself, so it's not in your scope 1 and scope 2, but you are buying it. And there is, as I said, a lot of embodied carbon in this equipment. And the second important subscope, if you want, is the emissions that are going to be emitted by the services or the products you sell when somebody is going to use them. Okay, because in scope 3, we consider the company should be responsible for the emissions that are going to be due to the usage of the services and products they sell. And in digital, it's very important because scope 3 depends whether you talk about data center company, telecom operator, and so on, but scope 3 is generally 10 times as big as scope 1 and 2. Okay? So, when Google and the others say, we're going to divide emissions, we're going to be carbon neutral, and if you remember, that means that we'll have to divide emissions by half by 2030, they are talking about scope 1 and scope 2. Okay? So, time is running, so I'm not going into all the details, but I guess you will have the presentation. if you do the math, you will come to the conclusion that indeed, even though they will keep having their electricity consumption grow at a pace of 15 to 20% a year, okay, if they do equip, for instance, all their sites with renewable plants producing their own electricity, which is Google is doing at the moment, they will indeed manage to reduce their emissions. But in the meantime, their electricity consumption will have increased enormously, you see. At the same rate, it will go from 70 terawatt-hour to almost 350. Okay, so multiplication by 5. But it will be also true for the rest of the value chain. Well, the rest of the value chain is also, is not only the energy that's going to be consumed by you and me when we are going to use Google services, but also the energy consumed by the networks that are necessary to establish the connection between the user and the Google data center, for instance. Okay. So the rest of the value chain, of course, the energy consumption is much bigger. It will increase a bit less, but it will still increase almost by a factor 4. And actually, the result, they're right. The scope 1 and scope 2 will be reduced by 50% if they do that, even though they will have multiplied the energy consumption by 5. Okay? But in the meantime, the carbon footprint of their value chain, that means their scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3, will have increased by 50%. Okay? That means that there are two comments. One is, for the reason as described, their business models and their growth profile is incompatible with sustainability constraints. Two, the, let's say, sustainability plans they have announced make us believe that they are not anymore a threat. So they can use that to legitimate the fact that they can keep growing as they have been growing. Okay. So it's a double threat because actually, yes, they will be able to show they were right, but in the meantime, they will have continued aggravating actually the environmental footprint of the digital sector. So as we have only 5 minutes left, so what can we do? Well, I think as I said during the DeForest presentation, the first thing we have to do is to make big tech smaller. Because if we don't do that, of course we can push and we can support alternative initiatives and alternative platforms. But I went to several workshops on this in the past 2 days, and what I heard is that it's very difficult at the moment because they are fighting against giants, and also it's very difficult both to receive enough financing and also enough, I would say, publicity to help them become just to become them a viable alternative. Because if you don't know they exist, you're not going to use them. So the first thing we need to do is to make sure that the big tech themselves become smaller, and that's competition law and so on and so on, and maybe the continuation of the DMA, DSA regulations in Brussels. But it's also making sure that their business models as such are going to be made less attractive. And that's about data regulations, and it's also about sector regulation. And for instance, we should avoid these dual-sided markets where actually some players manage to externalize a large part, both of their costs and both as a financial and environmental cost, but to the detriment, actually, of the rest of the society and of the economy. So, probably it's a very limited list, but one way which seems quite interesting to me is the idea of cooperative platforms, especially in Europe. So we can think about let's say cooperative startups that from the start adopt a pure digital model but with a cooperative legal arrangement. But we can also see the 220,000 cooperatives that exist in Europe and see how they can transform digitally and become themselves platform but remain cooperatives. Okay. It should not be so difficult, actually, in my mind. All the technology is there. These cooperatives, at least locally, are well-known players. They have customers and so on. So just have to make sure they have been provided with the tools to become more efficient and maybe to upscale their operations. So that's the alternative we should be pushing for. And as I said, the public policies which are needed, first is to make big tech smaller. but also, I mean, the hell is in the details on that. For instance, when you first go on Facebook, let's say, you're being asked whether you agree on the terms and conditions for the use of the service. But of course, 90% of the people are not going to read the terms and conditions, and if you do that, you will have very long pages of legal terms, and after a while, you say, okay, I'm going to accept. But actually, these terms of reference, what do they do? They establish a contract between you and them, and it gives them the ability and the right to use the data you provide for free in the way they want, basically. So we have, and it's very difficult to let's say to check whether it is what is exactly in place. So I think we have to enhance the existing data regulation and forbid the acquisition of personal data by default. That means there should be an explicit authorization on a detailed set of data that should be given. And also, last but not least, we have to make sure that the technical architecture of the web is going to evolve according to directions that will make all those things easier. And especially giving the ability to each individual user to have I would say physically, the full control of the data. Okay, sorry, I would have been a bit long, but if you still have some questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, I guess we have time for maybe two, three questions.
Hi there, Chris Adams, Green Web Foundation. I have a question. Are there any other sectors we can learn lessons from to address some of the problems you described about a small number of very, very powerful players or people having something they had for free that they might not want to pay for? Because there are other sectors who've had to deal with the same kind of consolidation of power and influence previously.
I'm not sure I have the answer like that. I think one difficulty we have with digital is that it's a sector where technology and usages are changing very fast, and it makes a hard time for policymakers because they're always behind. They are still trying to fight the battle before the last battle. But the new war is coming, and they have not seen it yet. Okay, and I think we are going to see that with the metaverse thing, which is full of problems. So I'm not sure we can really derive any lessons from another sector. Another question? It's too late. One question.
So on the last slide, you mentioned Web3 as one of the options. I find that very interesting because Web3, I would connect to the blockchain industry, decentralization in that direction, which I don't think is less energy consuming than what we already have. And I think there are alternatives that actually exists. There's something called Small Web, which is exactly the counterpart to Web3, which then goes like degrowth in that sense.
So maybe
you want to comment the Web3 on
this. I used Web3 in a generic term because there are still a lot of different approaches of Web3. And we should certainly avoid with Web3 to create, new monopolies in the place of other monopolies. Certainly, I was saying that as there is work in process on how to evolve the internet architecture, these principles should be at the core of the redefinition of the architecture. Now, is blockchain the solution or not, and which type of blockchain, and how can blockchain can help? That one of the many technical questions that should be resolved, but it should not be seen as a religious option.
Thank you.
Another question? Maybe one last? That's not the case. So once again, big applause and thank you very much for this nice presentation. So